Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Monday, September 6th, 2021. In the United States, they're celebrating it as a holiday, Labor Day. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever discovered. These tools are available absolutely free, whyagain.org, through the tireless efforts of Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice. And these tools, if you go to that website and click on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner of the page, it'll take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And it's a narrative description in that chapter of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. It's a tool I've been using to great effect for over 17 years to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships. And it's a tool that you can also use to turn any negative emotional state you experience into part of the infallible guidance system that every one of us has been given. You can also download the actual tool itself. It's a simple PDF file. Click the link, download it, print it off, copy it, and use it as often as you'd like. You can also click links to download a whole host of audio files of shows just like this one where people have called in and been stepped through that worksheet process and or given powerful testimonials about how the use of that process has improved the quality of their life. And you can also go to your app store and type in the three words Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you will see the glowing heart icon. If you tap on that, you can download a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Drag-On Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. We hope people do that soon and often because that frequently leads to comments, questions, and testimonials. And if you have that, give us a call at 563-999-3581. Call that number and press 1, and we can have a conversation. We're also doing the Course in Miracles experiment and the Course in Miracles workbook lessons from this year. Today is the 249th day of the year. I thought I would back up and read Saturday's lesson, which is, without forgiveness, I will still be blind. And forgiveness in this work is the removal of the false belief that anything was wrong, that anybody could wrong you, or that your true nature could be hurt in any way. And yesterday's lesson simply states, whatever suffers is not part of me. And in other ways of looking at that would be the thought structure that we call the ego, and that's what creates suffering and creates our experience of suffering, when our true nature is far more powerful, the words escape me. It is, our true nature is that which has awareness and cannot be hurt in any way. Today's lesson reads, forgiveness ends all suffering and loss. And the commentary reads, forgiveness paints a picture of a world where suffering is over, loss becomes impossible, and anger makes no sense. When attack is gone, madness has an end. So now what suffering could be conceived of? What loss can be sustained? The world then becomes a place of joy, abundance, charity, and endless giving. It is now so like to heaven, quickly is transformed into the light that it reflects. And so the journey which the Son of the Creator began has ended in the light from which he came. Creator, we would return our minds to you. We have betrayed them, held them in a vice of bitterness, and frightened them with thoughts of violence and death. Now we would rest again in you, as you created us. And Pam Grout's lesson 249 is titled, Nelson Mandela, Poster Child for A Course in Miracles. From the book Nelson, My Hero Mandela, she quotes, man's goodness is a flame that can be hidden but never extinguished. A few years ago, Pam writes, when visiting Robben Island, a replica of Nelson Mandela's prison bracelet, engraved with 46664, the number he was assigned during his 27 years of prison. This bracelet that I wear nearly every day reminds me that no matter how it looks on the outside, there's always a greater story going on. I think of South Africa often when I get discouraged that things never change, or when I wonder what I, as one person from Kansas, can do to affect that change. It wasn't that long ago that ending apartheid in South Africa seemed impossible, much like it seems impossible to fix all of the rifts on our planet today. But during my lifetime, it went from impossible to possible almost overnight. Nelson Mandela probably didn't own the big blue doorstop. Reading material at Robben Island was verboten. But he understood lesson 249. So the big blue doorstop is a code word for the Course in Miracles. Lesson 249 reads, forgiveness ends all suffering and loss. Nelson Mandela intuitively knew that if he spent his time in prison letting his anger fester, he would turn bitter and cold. That's why he befriended his white prison guards, showed kindness to those who mistreated him. He recognized the white guards were just as enslaved by the system as he was. And when he was finally released after 27 years of hard labor, he launched a forgiveness tribunal. He invited the very guards who abused him to his inauguration. Mandela's shining example reminds us that forgiveness changes everything. It also reminds us to never give up, never lose your sense of humor, never forget to dance. So, that's our Course in Miracles lesson for today, and the Course in Miracles experiment commentary from Pam Grout. And as usual, we have plenty of time to talk. What's on your mind this Labor Day? what would be a useful way, a productive way for us to be of service to you on this day? Our call-in number again is 563-999-3581. And when you press 1, if you call that, it puts a little question mark by your phone number, and I can announce you by your area code. So, what's on your mind? How could we support you today? I have been, as is my wont these days, doing a lot of reading between sessions. I'm pretty much finished with the book Emotion Code by Dr. Bradley Nelson, which is a book I highly recommend. I read it years ago, and it augmented some of my energy work healing modality, and then I drifted away from it because the neuroemotional technique, which is an almost identical technique that I use, is something I was already trained in and getting fabulous results with for anybody who's willing to participate. And of course, that word willing is a critical word in any healing. I must be willing to change. I must be willing to believe I can get better. I must be willing to let somebody help me. I must be willing to look at the parts of my mind that I have consciously or unconsciously chosen to turn away from, because it is the parts of my mind that I hide from myself that literally hold the keys to my suffering and my healing. And the book by Bradley Nelson, The Emotion Codes, spells out a way to release what he calls trapped emotions, and he has a very similar idea of energy and emotions and the mental emotional processing as does Dr. Michael Rice and Guy Finley and Bruce Lipton and Greg Braden and the Byron Katie, etc. He just uses slightly different conceptualizations and terminology for this. And he has a concept that says you can release these trapped emotions with either the wave of your hand or the wave of a magnet over your governing meridian, which is like a center line that runs from your eyebrow up over your forehead, through the center of your skull, and to the base of your spine. It actually goes all the way down your neck to the base of your spine. For those people who are doing this kind of release work solo, they're doing it on themselves, they simply have to run their hand or their magnet from the eyebrow center line to the base of the skull 3 times, and that will release any emotion that's been trapped, that's been identified by the muscle testing in the process that he calls emotion code work. And it is it's for those who are willing, it's a powerful and effective way to release trapped emotions. And once we release trapped emotions, as most of us understand, regardless of, how we speak about it, the trapped emotions they're blockages. They cause constraint. They cause tension, resistance, frustration, aches, pains, etc. Very much the way Dr. John Sarno talked about tension myoneural syndrome. Well, Dr. Bradley Nelson's work with trapped emotions is exactly what Dr. Sarno recognized as my mental emotional tensions create tension myoneural syndrome, which is the muscles tense, and if they pinch off the blood flow to certain areas of tissue, even a 10% reduction in the flow of oxygen to tissue is enough to initiate excruciating pain. And so therefore we understand that the vast majority of aches and pains and problems with organs, et cetera, is about a stuck energy, a blocked energy flow, a blocked chi life force flow, a blockage in the, or an imbalance in the acupressure, acupuncture meridians. And so when we start looking at this and we start looking at the idea that if I am willing to question what I've been taught, what have I been taught? I've been taught that my body is a physical thing. I've been taught to think of myself as static and fixed and either right or wrong, good or bad, healthy or sick. And then when I get sick or I have symptoms, I start to think of myself as sick or as having a certain pattern of symptoms or a disease. And I think about it as though it's a very solid, real thing. And I think about my body as this very solid, real thing. And when I do that and there's any kind of a pain or a tension or an inflammation, I'm adding to the dysfunctional process that's causing that expression, that feeling, that experience. And so, you know, it's one of the gifts of this work. When I learned the neuroemotional technique, I was thrilled because it was so effective. But I had to spend thousands of dollars to get trained in it and practice and practice and practice. And then years later, I ran across Dr. Bradley Nelson's book and I realized, oh, this is great because the neuroemotional technique people will not let me teach anybody else that technique. But Dr. Bradley Nelson says, hey, here it is in the book. You know, we'll see. Put the chart up on a website. You can download it. Get yourself a refrigerator magnet. Get yourself a partner. Use it on yourself. Use it on your friends and family. And here's a way to start releasing these energies that Dr. Nelson calls trapped emotions and generate the willingness to start viewing yourself, your body, your emotions, your thought processes differently. And it's why he spends a lot of time in the beginning of his book talking about how we used to think about atoms as making up, you know, these are the particles, and the smallest particles inside the atom are the electron, the proton, and the neutron. But the more they studied them and the more they had developed the technological devices that could look at measure or get evidence of these, quote, particles, the more they realized the particles are not particles. They're not solid. These are packets of vibratory energies, frequencies, and sometimes they seem to pop in and out of existence. So you're made up of atoms, but the atoms are made up of nothing but energy. And the atoms are 99.999% empty space, and you're made up of those, arranged into molecules, arranged into tissue, arranged into organs, arranged into a body. And it's mostly empty space with energy flowing through it or stuck in it. And when you open your willingness to start thinking of yourself differently, you open an infinite capacity to experience yourself differently. Again, one of the things we talk about in this work is you have the infinite capacity to choose the focus of your conscious awareness. And it's the focus of your conscious awareness in each moment that creates your experience of life. So if you think of yourself as a solid, inflexible, durable body, you experience yourself that way, and then when something happens in that energy system to restrict the flow of energy or to create a disruption, you feel it as pain, and you experience it as damage or pain, and you suffer over it. when you begin to open up your experience to the idea that everything is energy. And it's just energy moving. And right now when I'm in pain, that means there's an energy that doesn't belong in the system. And I open myself to experiencing it as an energy flow and breathing differently and using tools, whether it's Reality Management Worksheet or Bradley Nelson's Emotion Code or the NET work. And I start experiencing my life differently because I'm thinking of it differently, then I open up an infinite capacity for change. Ellen, who called in the show, recommended a book by somebody, Dr. Moss, Richard Moss. And Inside Out Healing, Transforming Your Life Through the Power of Presence. And here's another book that I've been going through and finding so much similarity in this observation about how our thoughts and our buying into a pattern of thought about ourself, identifying with it, which we call the ego, is basically the mechanism we use to create most of our suffering. One of the quotes that I highlighted from that book is, the deeper suffering in life is usually less a result of what's actually happening than it is a consequence of all that you tell yourself about what is happening. It's less about being sick than it is about your thoughts about being sick, for instance. It's less about your partner leaving you than it is about what you tell yourself about the meaning of that separation. So this is an ancient truth. This is a deep truth. This is something we're not taught. And boy, when we learn it, if we're willing to apply it, we can make a tremendous series of transformations in our life by choosing presence and awareness over a pattern of negative thoughts and over our identification with a pattern of thoughts. Another thing I highlighted in that book says, being aware of anything implies a mysterious distance from what you are being aware of. There has to be the observer and the observed. If I'm going to be aware of something, my culture teaches me to think I'm right in the middle of life and I'm fully aware, but I'm not when I think I'm watching that. This distance that you can become aware of that is occurring every time you separate yourself from what you're looking at means there's actually a potential for relationship with whatever you are aware of. So you could have a relationship with your thoughts, a relationship with your memories, a relationship with your emotions and your feelings, instead of feeling like you're one with them and overwhelmed by them and completely identified with them. He goes on to say, you are never a victim. Considering yourself as a victim is never more than a thought or a belief. Even when you feel like a victim, you will discover that as soon as you bring yourself into the present moment, that thinking will stop, and very quickly the feeling of being a victim will be gone. You will learn to set yourself free through the power of presence. We are not taught to be awake and aware in the moment. We are taught to think. We are taught to figure things out. We are taught to experience ourselves as different from everyone and everything around us. We are not taught to look for the similarities. We are not taught about the truth of our nature. Why? I don't know exactly why. It's part of the culture and the conditioning that's been passed down to us. In Dr. Bradley Nelson's book, he goes into this in great detail where he talks about inherited emotions. It's actually another body of work that acknowledges what our science talks about and what, you know, Bruce Lipton and his work have looked at. And there's a movie on YouTube, The Ghost in Your Genes, you can look at. There are all kinds of scientific studies now that demonstrate, whether it's in the animal kingdom or in the human kingdom, that we inherit energies and patterns and emotions and stuck points and strengths and passions and phobias. We can inherit those through our bloodline. Tendencies towards depression or anxiety, tendencies for claustrophobia, tendencies for ease of facility with working with our hands or doing mathematics. The strengths and weaknesses of our generations are passed down. And so when we're understanding that we're being conditioned and trained into how do we think about and relate to our world, then whenever we have problems, we can say, well, maybe that training or conditioning was in error. If we can just be willing, again, that word willing, to open up and question everything we think we know, especially when there's a pain or a fear or a hurt or a sadness or a frustration or a guilt or a shame, especially when those negative emotions are active in our system, we can open up the potential for unlimited growth. And when we lock it down and we say we're in pain and we know we're right and the world is wrong, we shut off any potential for growth. So our call-in number is 563-999-3581. Welcome, Susan.
Hello, Dr. Tim. I love the big breath you just took. You were really on a roll. You're starting us up in such a way I feel as if you've lit a fire under several piles of brain material that need investigating here. One of them that comes right to mind is the contradiction or the tension between being gullible and being open and willing. I'll give you an example. I've spoken about this friend many times before, a very colorful healer friend of mine who calls me every once in a while and says, I'm calling you because you have two demons and 57 entities in your vicinity and I need to clear them for you. So I say to her, well, sure, go ahead. And she said, have you been feeling weird lately? And of course, then I think, of course I've been feeling weird lately. I don't know if there's any time in my life where I'm not feeling weird about something. So I think maybe she's right. Then I think, well, but if I think that, then I'm giving my power to all these other entities to be the cause of my misery, in other words, or my weirdness, or even just unease or whatever it is. In other words, I'm being a victim. And so I end up listening to her, trying to do what Guy Finley calls, and I love this, love being, one definition of love being effortless attention. So I'm breathing, I'm listening, I'm being with her, and I don't know anything. I don't know what to think or what to do with this information. I thank her. I hope I'm cleared of all the monsters. But so am I being gullible? I don't know. Am I digging 10 wells instead of just doing the Michael Rice worksheets and using his tools?
Well, when your friend calls you like that, when your friend calls you like that and suggests that she clears all these demons for you, is she then suggesting that you perform multiple rituals several times a day to make sure they stay away, or is it requiring anything of you to let her have her belief system?
In a way, yes. She says, have you been practicing clearing? When you get up in the morning, you should put your, basically their shit shields, excuse my language, she doesn't call them that, but she says, put up like a bell jar over yourself, and this will thwart any enemies. And I think, gosh, when I get up, I usually feel pretty good.
So let's take a look at what Course in Miracles might say about that. Rather than having any other experts, what does Course in Miracles say about attack and vulnerability?
That I am as God created me, and I'm safe and loved forever and always.
And then every time I get defensive, what do?
I'm attacking.
I create the attack, right? I create a thought of attack every time I become defensive. And the point of the Course in Miracles, it uses that word vulnerable and invulnerable, but the point of it is to tell us we are whole and complete and infinitely safe from our creation always. And that the thoughts about attack and defensiveness are always tied together. So that's the only response I have to your friend who tells you you have to get up in the morning and create a bell jar around you, and that what you're doing, according to the Course in Miracles, if you engage in that, which of course you can, is you're using your mind energy to create the belief that you are vulnerable and that you can be hurt, and that in that moment when you need to defend yourself, you're creating the very attack that you're trying to defend against. Now, I see this as very different than, here's this book, The Empath Survival Guide, and Judith Orloff, and she talks about being aware of energies and being aware of the impact on you and doing some of these mental shielding, spilling off energies kinds of moves, being gentle with yourself and understanding that it's just energy and let it flow. And I see that as very different than thinking there are demons that are attacking me that I need to defend against.
I'm glad you brought up that book, because I didn't make the distinction that you just made between her feeling as if she was vulnerable and under attack and had to, because of her super sensitivities and her empath nature, that she had to kind of shield herself. And you're saying something a little different. It's just different enough to make me want to pay attention to her book again. I sort of put her book, I read it, but then I thought, if I called myself an empath, I would be using that in a way that was not healthy. It would be a belief about myself. Yeah.
Right. It's not about beliefs. It's about experience, right? So she doesn't run around telling people, you are an empath, you have to do this and that. She says, if you experience things this way, then these things that we've learned to do might be useful for you. You can do them or not do them. If they're useful, do them. If they're not so useful, don't do them. That, to my eye and ear, is very different than somebody saying, we have demons out here, and we need to defend against them, and always be on alert, get up every day, and put your wards up. And that's a very different thing.
Yeah, and it goes on. I mean, not that I need to say this, but one part of what she says is that there are beings on other planets who really want power over us, and we are just slaves and puppets. A lot
yes,
of
yes,
really
yeah, well,
terrible
so, you know, I like a good science fiction fantasy as much as anybody. And
mm-hmm.
and that's, you know, that's okay. But when I turn it into a reality, now I'm creating, this is just, so everything we're talking about with all this work, I create my experience of life by what I choose to focus my conscious awareness upon. And I know people that I trust and respect for a lot of their judgment and their intelligence, and they absolutely buy into that stuff. And it's never been useful to me to, you know, and it might just be that I just don't have the brain power, that the type of brain power that would be needed to keep track of all of the different planets and dimensions and the lizard people and the other
the
people. I don't have it in me, right? I just don't have it in me. And if I did,
right.
I would then have to make a conscious choice about, do I want to spend it on that stuff?
Mm-hmm. That's good.
So,
yeah.
So, you know, Occam's razor, you know, the concept of, you know, the simplest possible solution that explains the phenomenon is probably the best. That's where I would go with that. And it's completely understandable in my experience. You know, I have wonderful explanations for and relief from most all of the aches and pains and sufferings I have in my life without turning to the lizard people demon explanation.
That's good. Very helpful. Well, on another note, and from the other side of things, maybe you got this too. I got an invitation from Matt Kahn. He's running this webinar, and it costs money, but he gave a preliminary little intro to it. It was free, and I listened to it. It was about maybe 20 minutes long. And he said something I've never heard before. He said two things. No matter what it is, no matter how angry, frustrated, murderous, whatever, what you need is love. Well, of course, it was good to hear. He said it's almost like repeating a mantra. But then he said, even if I hate someone and cannot forgive them, I can allow my source to do the forgiving and loving for me. I don't have to do it myself. I just breathe and allow it to be done for me because I can't do it. Now, that's probably been said many times before, but I never heard it the way I heard it this time. It sort of takes a huge weight off to know that it's taken care of anyway. I know the Course in Miracles says that now that I'm thinking
about it.
Yeah,
turn it over to the Holy Spirit. How many times have you heard, turn it over to the Holy Spirit? How many times have you heard the great comforter? How many times you've heard Michael Rice talk about the super processor? It's the same basic dynamic I would offer.
Super processor. I've heard him say that, but tell me more about that.
Well, it's the idea that he talks about how we have a 9-bit mind, right?
Yeah.
That 9-bit mind in any given moment can only be aware of consciously 9 individual bits. But he says, you know, he says the mind functions in every cell of the body. Right? And then he says, imagine that you've got, I don't know, let's just say for the sake of argument, you've got 1 billion nerve cells in your brain. I don't know what the numbers are, but you've got 1 billion nerve cells in your brain, and every one of them can process 1 million bits of data and hold 1 million bits. So it's 1 million billion, whatever that number would be. And then you've inherited stuff from the bloodline. And then every day you're alive, more stuff comes up that needs to be worked through. And you're processing with a 9-bit mind. Right? So
right.
In each moment, there's this 1 million billion bits of information bouncing around and having combinations in your brain. And that includes, you know, is added on to what you inherited from your bloodline. And you're trying to work through everything in 9 bits every moment. Even if you concentrate all of your emotions and thoughts and efforts on it all day, every day when you're awake, you'll never get through that. Right, because there's more coming, and it's an endless them, and it's a million billion versus 9 single bits and all that good stuff. So he says the super processor is Ruka Dukucha. It is this elemental force specific to humans that's implanted in each one of us, that's there to break off the effects of the error in our thought and guide us to truth and happiness if we just ask it to. Right, there's that willingness from the intro, that word, I need to be willing to be shown. I need to ask to be shown. And that's where that Holy Spirit, that great comforter, that elemental force for humans that's there to break off the effects of our errors and thoughts and guide us to truth and happiness, that's what Michael Rice says. In modern terms, we would call it a super processor. It can process through these things. It's not limited by the 9-bit mind. So you can't do it alone. Guy Finley says, it is absolutely essential that everything you do to try to know the Creator fails. It's absolutely essential. Because you have to get to the point where your conscious, logical, egoic mind finally gives up trying to know this stuff and realizes, I can't know. I don't know. And that's when this higher force, whether it's Ruka Dukucha, the Holy Spirit, your unconscious, God, his or herself, whatever you want to call it, steps in and makes the connection for you. And it goes beyond words. And you get ushered into an experience that there are no words for, which is why so many people have these enlightened experiences, and then they come back and they can't even figure out how to talk about them, because it was it's an experience that goes beyond time and beyond words. So let me invite Ellen into the conversation, since she's raised her hand. Ellen? Your comments
Hi, Dr.
and questions? Hello, Ellen.
Yeah. Hello. Hi, Susan.
Hi.
Based on like what you were talking about earlier with the demons and all that, reminded me of the nightmares that I have, where I feel like this evil force shows up and wants to take me over, and it's so terrifying. I always end up like just waking myself up. And the clear message I got was to, instead of trying to, you know, do the same thing, because this sort of dream has been going on for years and years and years, of trying to flee or avoid it, get away from it. And the way I've been getting away from it is waking myself up. Is to actually turn towards it, because there is nothing that can really hurt me. And I've actually even been shown in a waking experience that where I felt the same type of force coming over me, and I was terrified, I was shown later that it was actually love. It was actually the presence of love. And I was just, I couldn't believe that I was so afraid of love. I was like, wow, but that's actually what the Course teaches us, right? Our greatest fear is the fear of God, or the fear of love. And it looks, you know, we perceive it as something really, really, really scary, or at least I do. And so I haven't been given the opportunity yet in a dream or in waking life to actually turn towards that instead of get away from it. But that is my intention the next time something like that turns up. But again, it's also very key what you were just saying, Dr. Tim, because I was like, can I actually do that? Like, I'm so afraid. I'm always so afraid in the moment. But the thing is, I have to also have that realization that I am not alone. Of course, I can't do that on my own. I can't, because, you know, like the courage isn't actually my courage. I have to recognize that it's I am, you know, I what my true self is there as well, not just the egoic self, which is the self that's so afraid.
So take a breath, Ellen, because I think you're right on it. Look at this when you say the true self. Look at what is it in us that experiences fear? And just ask. Just ask, does the true self ever experience fear? Just breathe. Just sit with that for a minute. And most of us who have done some serious sitting with that come fairly clearly to the realization that the ego is the only thing that experiences fear.
Mm-hmm.
And the true self that you were just mentioning doesn't experience fear because it understands who and what it is can't be hurt, isn't vulnerable, isn't weak, isn't of substance that can be damaged, chipped, dented, rusted, faded, broken in any way.
Right, and that anything that appears fearful isn't even real. That's the illusion, you know, false evidence appearing real. That there really is no evil. I mean, I truly believe that, and yet I have this, you know, been having this nightmare for years where there's like this evil force. And it just became so clear this last time, this last dream that I just had recently, that move towards that. What you are afraid of, move towards recognizing that you cannot be hurt and you're not alone. It's not something you have to do on your own. You can't, like you said, you can't do it on your own. So, I just wanted to put in that was, you know, clearly the message I have been given. I mean, right after I had this last nightmare, the next morning, and I don't know if you've gotten to this part in the book, you know, the inside out healing, but he spoke directly to that. And I was like, okay, this is not a coincidence, you know. And he's saying when you open to feelings like that, it's like a rite of passage. It's like this door opens and you're ushered in through and into like this new way of being. And so it's a treasure to be found, not an evil to be run away from.
All right. Probably true. Probably more true than we will realize until we go through the experience ourselves.
Exactly.
So I'm thinking of my friend who's telling me about the entities and the demons and the aliens who are doing. And this is just a practical thing. I have never shut her down. I have never criticized her. Nor do I plan to, but I would love to have a loving way of maybe just listening. Maybe that's all I can do, because my impulse is to correct her or fix her, and I know that's just not so good. Any ideas?
But when you go to correct her or fix her, isn't there a fundamental assumption right before you go to correct her or fix her that you actually know something?
Well, I do know what I want to focus on, and it isn't that. So.
Okay, but that's not correcting her or fixing her, right? To choose what you prefer to focus on is not about a correction for her. So if you want to listen because it's a friendship thing, then listen. And if you want to stop listening and you want to be gentle about it, you just say, you know, this isn't resonating for me, and so I'm going to, you know, request that we talk about other things. But that's not correcting her and fixing her. That's not telling her she's wrong. That's just telling her about your personal preference.
That's good, because I've just resorted to exclamations like, wow, and holy mackerel. So, I don't know what to say, but I love this woman, you know, and we don't talk that much, but whenever we do, she's like a psychic drama queen. I mean, everything is so dramatic, and I get pooped. So anyway, that's very helpful. Oh, yeah.
Well, just remember, if you're going to go correct anybody or fix anybody, you first have to have had that kind of silly thought that you actually know something.
I like that very much.
And all these great spiritual teachings are telling us we don't know anything. The Course in Miracles, the Way of Mastery, has exercises in it that say, you know, just spend 15 minutes every day picking things up and realizing, I don't know where this thing came from, how it got here, what it truly is, what it's for. I don't know what my brother or sister needs in this moment. I don't know when they were created. I don't know when I was created. As an exercise to just get outside the egoic struggle of knowing it all.
That's good.
And then if I'm willing to get outside that struggle and realize I don't know anything, and then I throw it open to be taught by life, by love, by God, by whatever Holy Spirit, whatever you want to use, in the moment, just watch how your life changes when you do that. One of the hardest parts for me when I did that was getting to notice how as soon as I would do that and ask to be taught, then my ego would kick in looking for an answer. So for me, it was, you know, a several-step process of practicing asking to be shown and then practicing watching the ego slip in saying, okay, now what should I do? And there isn't that the whole thing. The whole thing is simply staying present in the moment, staying open to the people and things around me, and trusting that once I ask to be shown, whatever comes out of me is going to be just fine. It may not be anything like what my egoic healer, hero, warrior self would want to do, but it's going to be fine.
Yeah, and would you recommend too, like, just because I know I get in these situations a lot where I feel like something needs to be done, but I don't know what to do. So, and it's a very difficult feeling. Well, that's a label. It's just a feeling that's uncomfortable.
It's an intense feeling.
It's an intense feeling.
Intense.
But
yeah,
I think, you know, I mean, what we want to do whenever we have a feeling like that, right, is make it stop. But if we could just allow ourselves to be with it, again, I think it's the same thing as turning towards the fear, turning towards this other uncomfortable feeling, and just allowing it to be, and see what comes. Again, you know, it's being present. It's being present with whatever is arising.
Well, and, you know, to my way of thinking and including all of this is to say, when I say something's got to be done and this is all wrong, it's the realization that I'm judging and that, you know, if I don't have that calm, focused, you know, compassionate essence of action flowing from me, if I'm in tension, if I'm in frustration, I'm probably still operating from the ego that thinks it knows what the heck's going on. And if I ask to be shown and trust the result and breathe into it and soften until action flows from me in that effortless way, I get far better results.
Yeah, well, it's just like that lesson we had, you know, whatever suffers is not part of me.
Exactly.
And put that distance between what is suffering and your awareness of what is suffering.
Yeah.
Where
that's
like
and
having
my...
little...
Go ahead. That's like having a little what?
An emotional Fitbit, which is measuring, I mean, how much time are we spending in not feeling great? Man, the percentages, I mean, you could almost measure it. Yeah.
So, you know, when I ask to be shown and my ego is in place waiting for the answer, it wants to know what to do and that it's going to be right and that other people are wrong. And I'll, you know, my next step is to watch for that tension that's created from the part of me that wants to figure it out and wants to know and wants to be seen as the one doing it right, et cetera. And I just drop that tension and settle into the realization that when it's true insight and intuition, I'm going to feel this calm, centered knowing, and my actions will flow from that. And things just, they go so much better when I let that happen. So the idea for me was, you know, it was a whole new idea at one point in my personal work to say, okay, I really don't know anything. Let me just stop here. Some people would say offer a silent prayer. Some people would say just ask to be shown. Some people would say take a breath and go inside. To me, it's all the same stuff. And then I would say, okay, good, I've done that now. And then I would catch myself charging off to go do what my ego would want me to do. And it wouldn't go so well. And then the next step was for me to learn that it was really important to just watch that tendency for the ego to jump in and say, okay, you asked, and now what's the answer? And just settle back. Just, you know, watch the ego and the tension and the resistance and let my actions flow from whatever presents itself in the moment when I'm actually in what, you know, Richard Moss would call presence, when I'm in awareness, when I'm in the moment and awake.
Yeah, because there's a world of difference between being in direct contact with whatever is going on, right, feeling an experience, and being in contact with it through your thoughts, which is not direct contact. That's through the ego's mind, you know, like thinking about it instead of just being with it and having that direct, immediate experience of it rather than thinking about it.
Yep. Yeah, it's very, very different. And there aren't really words, except the closest I've come to words are the idea of feeling calm and centered as opposed to feeling nervous or anxious or pressured. So I realized, I just looked up and realized that we are out of time, and I will mute you both and let you listen in. I will remind us all that we come from love. We are made of love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. Welcome, Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tim. Good conversation, Susan and Ellen. Appreciate it.
Have a wonderful show.
Thank you. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mind Shifters Radio. Today is Monday, September the 6th, 2021. And I hope you're having a restful Labor Day. I know it's supposed to be for resting from labor, and some people are still having to work. But we hope that you're having a good day. Give Michael just a few moments to get dialed in, and invite you to go to our website, which is www.whyagain.org, and click on the Start Here button or the bullseye in the middle of the page. Both of those take you to the same place, and you'll find the tools, MP3s of radio shows where we've walked people through doing a worksheet. You'll find all of the worksheets for all of the workshops online. You can access the worksheet to actually fill it in online if you don't want to print them out. And you've always got the app on your phone. So put the tools to work in your life and you will see a change. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you, dear heart, and welcome, everybody. Delighted that you're here to join with us in carrying forward this conversation to one more level, one more time, as we move forward in understanding each of the tools that comes out of our original work with the first century Aramaic teachings of the man named Yeshua. And the more I work with those teachings, the more the precision and the brilliance of them is just amazing. The practical application, amazing. And one of the things, and we've talked over the last several weeks, is that we were looking at what we're going to do with the Mind Shifters and Still Point Breathing work. And so what we've decided to do, we finally kind of, you know, after talking to a few folks and thinking about it, decided that we're going to create a monthly online membership for Mind Shifters and Still Point Breathing. So we'll be doing a monthly Mind Shifters and Still Point Breathing workshop the second Saturday of every month from 10 till 5 o'clock Eastern Time. We're going to include several videos with that. And then the Wednesday following that second Saturday, and we're not saying the second Wednesday because it won't always fall that way with the way the calendar goes. So the second Saturday of every month, regularly now, for eternity, we're going to do a Mind Shifters and Still Point Breathing workshop. And then the following Wednesday, from 7 till 9 Eastern Time, we'll do a question-answer follow-up session to process that and assist people just in building the skill of using both the tools of Mind Shifters and Still Point Breathing. And our first workshop will start on the, let's see, what date is it, Jeannie? October the 9th, I believe it is, will be our first, or our next Mind Shifters and Still Point Breathing workshop on Zoom.
Yes,
October 9th. So if you want to be part of that, October 9th, we'll be on. It'll be from 10 to 5 Eastern Time. And then the following Wednesday, which will be October the 13th, from 7 till 9 p.m., we'll do a Zoom session geared to do question and answer and just enhancing the understanding and practice of the tools. There will be a couple of bonus things that come. There are going to be three different levels of participation. You can do it monthly, just, you know, one time up type of thing. And it's going to include these bonus videos, even if you do just that one-time session. It'll include the Mind Shifters and Introduction to Still Point Breathing video out of our normal catalog. That's normally a $40 video. It will include the an introduction to Mind Shifters and selecting Mind Shifters so that prior to the intensive, which we found that when we, you know, start out on Friday night, when we have done that in the past, we did like the last session, we did a Friday night and all day Saturday. And we found that we really could have set the Friday night up so that people could do that on their own. Get your Mind Shifter. We've created a video that instructs on the whole body of how and what the Mind Shifter is, how it works. And so we're going to set it up so that people can select it. We'll be sending people when they register those two videos. And you'll also get a video of your actual workshop or each workshop that you do. If you do it just once, the cost will be $150. If you decide to do, we're going to have three levels. So there's a month membership, and then there'll be a three-month membership. So the three-month membership will be three sessions. And you can take those three sessions anytime. They don't have to be consecutive. You could do one in October and then do another one in January and then another one in March, however that works. And the three sessions will be $350. So that'll be three Saturday all-day workshops and then a Wednesday that follows up. And or you can do an annual membership of 12 months of sessions. and that 12 months will be $100 a month, so it'll be $1,200 for the year. And or if you choose to pay in advance, it'll be $900 to do that. And of course, we can always make interest-free financial arrangements if somebody has a challenge in doing that. So we'll have the video. It's an hour and 12 minutes of the introduction, pardon me, of Mind Shifters and the introduction of Stillpoint Breathing. There'll be the Mind Shifters Zoom class from August of 2021. And that will be it. So that will mean that what we have done in the past, the Friday night will be self-study. And then, of course, the radio show is always here 5 days a week to support people and questions and answers so that you get as much as you can of that. And then we're going to create something new for those who are familiar with it, and for those who aren't, it'll take some time to build the brain cells for it. But you'll remember that on Friday night, when we do the Mind Shifters and Stillpoint Breathing, we have people select a pair of numbers, and those numbers point to what Mind Shifter they'll be using to work for stirring things up for that session on Saturday. And so in that, we have three sections of Mind Shifters. And, you know, if you've participated before, in fact, we could do it right now. Let's get people to go ahead and pick two numbers. If you'd like, we'll make this part of the show. We're going to invite you to pick two numbers, one from one to three. So first number that pops into your head, one, two, or three, write that one down. And the second number from one to 13. And Jeannie has a piece of paper with 39 Mind Shifters on it, divided into three parts, part one, part two, part three, 13 Mind Shifters in each. So the two numbers that you selected will point to which Mind Shifter we're going to invite you to work with. So that will be part of the workshop. And then what we're going to do is we're going to create an expanding Mind Shifters database. So each month, we're going to add another section of Mind Shifters. So the first workshop that you do will be 39 Mind Shifters. And then the next month, we'll actually add a whole new section with another 13 different Mind Shifters. And the next month, we'll add another section with a different 13 Mind Shifters. And the next month, and the next month, and so forth. So you'll have this expanding. You know, back when I had a practice in South Florida, this goes back 30 years ago, I had a practice where I worked 3 days a week with people doing Mind Shifters and Stillpoint Breathing and doing private sessions, and I always kept a record of all of those Mind Shifters, so I have hundreds of them. And so we're going to organize those into groups and add 13 new ones each month to that. So when you participate in the Mind Shifters and Stillpoint Breathing workshop, you will get that set of Mind Shifters for that particular month, whatever it happens to be, to just expand things and make more and more available. And if you're interested, again, there are three levels of participation. The first workshop is going to be October the 9th, or the next workshop will be October the 9th. We're just in the process of finishing off a flyer and, you know, doing all the details on that. And so we'll be sending that out in our newsletter. We'll send a newsletter out focused on this new membership process that we're doing with Heartland Aramaic Mind Shifters and Stillpoint Breathing. So if you're interested in that, if you're not on our mailing list, you can go to our website, whyagain.org. And down at the bottom of the page, you'll see a link that says, get on our mailing list. Click that and give us your information, and it'll keep you posted on what's happening with the tools. So that's just one more of the products that we're adding to our list of what you can do to gather support for using these tools. And I'm sure that at some point we'll be adding things to the membership. I don't know. This is a starting point. We're still in the process of reinventing and recreating how we do our work since we've pretty much completed 40 years of online, or pardon me, on the road travel, and now we're doing everything online. So we're just, you know, creating as we go along, how can we invent something that will make this more functional in terms of supporting people? So there'll be two live interaction Zoom sessions, the second Saturday and the following Wednesday of each month. Off into the future if you want to join us. And beyond that, our book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? If you haven't been joining us, we've been reading from the book, doing just a couple of paragraphs per day on the radio show, so that over the period of a year, we'll have gone through the whole book. If you haven't read it, it's a free read. You can buy it, but you can also read it free, as with most of our products. So if you want to buy a copy of the book, we don't have it for sale ourselves because the book is out of print. But fortunately, when we had several, I don't even know how many tens of thousands that went out back in the late 90s, early 2000s, there's still lots of them around. And if you go to eBay or Amazon, they've always got used ones for sale. So you can buy them there. Or you can go to our website, whyagain.org, and you can download the book free in any one of, I don't know, 7 or 8 or 9 different languages, whatever the number is these days. Our latest language that was added was Dutch, and that was kind of interesting. It's probably, what is it, almost a year and a half ago now, Jeannie, that we were doing the show, and she got an email in the middle of the show, and it's somebody from Holland. Said, hey, I got a hold of your book and read it online and started doing those worksheets, changed my life. And so here's my contribution to your work. I've translated the book into Dutch. And there it was. So, and if you happen to speak a language that we do not already have a translation of for the book, and you would like to make it available to people who speak your language, if you translate it, we'll put it on our website free, and anybody in the world that speaks that language will have access to Why Is This Happening to Me Again. And it's a story. It's a made-up story. It's not about an individual that exists, but it is a composite individual. It's a character, Richard. It's this recalcitrant kind of guy that doesn't want to hear anything I've got to say about anything, but, you know, he's going through his third divorce, and somebody suggested he stop at Heartland and talk to me, that there might be some resolution for him. So we're, you know, well past the halfway point in the book and our conversation with this character, Richard. And we're on the chapter, The Body Has a Mind of Its Own. And we've been talking about the file folder effect. And he's realizing how some of the messages that were given to him as a child have been running his life. And so we've covered that idea of the file folder effect. And then I make the request of him or speak about, you know, somebody being yelled at, punished, about how incompetent they are. And especially in this case, you know, messages that life tends to give people in our puritanical insanity, a message like, sex is dirty, save it for the one you love. And so he's looked at how that's applied in his relationships and how there's pretty much been bedlam in his life. And he says to me, as I talk about, you know, what would be the effect of this message given to a small child, sex is dirty, save it for the one you love. And he offers, you know, it's going to be crazy. And he admits it's just like his marriages have been crazy. He's been through 3 of them. He says it's bedlam. It's insane. Divorce, pain, hatred, revenge, being at war. They wept in grief and rage. I sat quietly and held the space of love as he processed through some pretty profound emotions. And the key thought that's offered in the book at this point is, the more we are able to presence love for each other, the faster our healing process proceeds. I admired his courage in facing these buried issues. I thought about how so many of us have been up against a wall before, have to be up against a wall before willing to confront ourselves. I suspect that is because we've been trained to numb our pain to the point where it takes a major crisis to break through our drug state and get our attention. And of course, you know, we are probably the most drugged population the world has ever seen. Between the legal and illegal drugs, the alcohol, I mean, every street corner you can go in and buy drugs in America, called coffee, caffeine, sugar has been integrated into virtually every food that's offered commercially. Commercial foods have basically had most of the nutrition removed and sold to the pig farmers, so the food itself becomes a drug. And then you just have to listen to one newscast, I don't care what station you tune to, and listen through one newscast to look at how many people are drugging themselves with rage. And then, you know, back a couple of years ago, we did a workshop in a high-security prison up in Ionia, Michigan. And these were guys that were in this prison for 25 years to life. It was a high-security prison where they brought all of the worst prisoners from the state of Michigan to this one facility. And we started out and did a couple of classes, and then two teachers actually, Michelle being one of them, Rex, went in and carried on with a study group. And they were getting ready to go in and do laws of living. And the tradition, you know, that course was originally designed for the prison system. And the tradition was that the inmates always had to pay for it, had to be invested, because if people don't invest when they start doing process work, it's too easy for them to turn tail and run and blame somebody else, drug themselves with rage and go in the other direction. So it was set up so that over a period of 8 weeks during the support group, the inmates who wanted to do laws of living, their investment to get into the class free was to do 5 worksheets a day. Now, this is a group of men who are locked in their cells 23 of 24 hours. 1 hour a day, they get to go out in the yard and exercise. If they perhaps had a job in the commissary or the laundry or something, they might have another couple of hours. But otherwise, they're locked in their cells 23 of 24 hours by themselves. And when it came time for laws of living to start, every one of them had the same reason why they hadn't completed the 5 worksheets a day for 40 days. And I'd offer it was because they were drugging themselves. And the drug was, believe it or not, 23 hours locked in a cell. Every one of them, to a man, had the same excuse. I was too busy. Now, I talked to lots of people who use these tools, and it's really interesting how when the stress is up and the chips are down and they're in the middle of their muddle and they know they need to do some healing work, and sometimes they'll call the session, well, how many worksheets have you done? Oh, well, I actually hadn't thought of doing any on that. And, well, why not? Well, I've been too busy. We're the most drug society that's ever been on the planet. And so we numb our pain, and it's time for us to wake up. At this point, we're talking to Richard about it's safe to feel what comes up and face the issues, and that was how his healing would happen. Richard expressed his relief and confided that he had not felt emotions so deeply since he was a child. His face took on a radiance as soon as the sorrow it had reflected earlier ebbed away. We extended our example. This is the 6 of 30, favor of the one you love example. And you watch how people have such a sexual attraction, and yet because of the conflicting, pained information and experiences they have locked away, unwilling to face them, they move farther and farther away from this gift of intimacy that was given to us. So we extended our example as we wondered what a couple living in a cabin in the woods would go through in adjusting to each other. Richard shared from my experience with intimate relationships, even that would be difficult. I suggested that we take a look at the same couple in the middle of New York City, dealing with each other and the complexities of their interactions. Now compound all of that by adding the file folder effect, which is exaggerated by all the stimulation of a metropolis. In the city, their senses are bombarded by movies, television, masses of people, magazines, newspapers, billboards, advertising in stores and on taxi cabs and buses. These media continuously impale each spouse's mind with both subliminal and overt messages of fear, guilt, sex, violence, hatred, drug and alcohol use and abuse. If their minds contain highly charged emotional realities connected to any of these issues, and they're continuously being resonated into activity, how sane can they be? Is it any wonder people turn to drugs and alcohol to cope? And of course, even sex itself can become a drug. The compulsive use we define in this work, a drug is the compulsive use of any person, place, circumstance, substance, activity, or event in order to hide our highest guidance from ourselves and or in order to refrain from feeling what's real and what's going on within us. Now, you just think about the file folder effect. You know, example I've used, don't think about the color of your car. What moves in you when I say don't think about the color of your car, but the color of your car? So, you know, think about somebody in this city, and it's not hard to figure out why our divorce rate's well over 50%. When you think about that file folder effect, so here are the movies, the television. Of course, back then, now, we didn't have social media when I wrote this book the way we do today. But you look at all the stimulation from each of these sources, billboards, advertising, newspapers, magazines, masses of people, television, stores. I mean, you walk into a store and the subliminal, sexual, suggestive advertising is just outrageous. Impaling the mind. And of course, there's so many messages that people never hear or see, but their mind, the unconscious, hears them and sees them, and resonance happens as a result of it. When do we wake up? When do we realize what's going on? And how do we recover our sensibilities and our sensitivity? I would offer, there's this awesome set of tools that's meant to walk us through that process. The book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? You can go to our website, free, download it, give it a read. Read it twice, read it three times, read it 10 times. The 10th reading, you'll read the book and you'll go, oh my God, I feel like I've never read this book before. And then dig out the worksheet. If you're not using the worksheet, go to our website, why again, whyagain.org, the upper left-hand corner, there's a Start Here button. Click the Start Here button to start going through the links. You can download the worksheet on your computer, print it off so you've got written worksheets to do. You can go to your app store on your phone, type in the words Heartland, H-E-A-R-T-L-A-N-D, one word, Heartland, Aramaic, A-R-A-M-A-I-C, forgiveness. And you'll be looking at the world's only forgiveness app. There's one. Created, thank you, Miss Jeannie, by the genius mind of Miss Jeannie. And it's just, you can sit at home, you can be on the bus, you can be in your car and doing, of course not driving, but doing the forgiveness process right there. you know, a whole lot more productive use of time than the distractions that the culture gives us. So again, the word forgive, having nothing to do with letting anybody else off the hook, never forgive anyone for anything, but simply a tool with which you can go inside yourself if you're in pain, if you're in trauma, if you're in turmoil, and remove the root of the pain, the trauma, and the turmoil. So delighted that you're honored here, to be here with us. We're honored to have you here with us. I misspoke there. And hopefully you're honored to be here too. And Miss Jeannie, do we have anybody in the phone queue with a hand up or anything happening in the chat room?
It is all quiet. And I am not sure if we completed Friday with Doug or if he's on with us. Press one if we need to continue.
We could certainly do that if that's appropriate.
He has not pressed
so Doug,
one, but I'm going to turn on his mic and just see.
Are you out there in listener land, Doug? How are
there
you, young
is.
Man?
I am here in listener land, yes.
How are you doing?
Well, some aspects of me I would hope might be slightly better. I don't know. Still pretty darn weak.
Are you having some physiological challenges?
Oh, my gosh, yes. I've been sick for 8 days.
Ouch.
Yeah, very sick. And in the beginning, I mean, I could clearly, you know, the pain point I feel over the pain that needs to come up and, you know, it's just kind of surfacing and rolling forward and rolling forward. I certainly may have been playing a pivotal role in my physical condition, but, you know, I may have some virus or who knows what I have. I don't know what I have. I know that I have something.
Do you, are you thinking you've maybe gotten COVID?
Could be. Could be.
Are you doing any kind of treatment, Doug, if you have? If you're not doing any kind of treatment and you think you might have COVID, I'd strongly urge you to get on some form of treatment instantly. Instantly.
I've been following the protocol. The frontline doctors, vitamin C, biocucerin, ivermectin,
D3,
et cetera.
Zinc.
D3, yeah.
You're doing all those
zinc.
Things, yeah.
I'm doing all
well,
that.
Well, I have a friend that was diagnosed just last week. She was like getting into a pretty sick state pretty quickly. And she went in that night, you know, the day she got tested and confirmed that she had it. And she went to the hospital. They kind of were resistant, but she finally got them to give her monoclonal antibodies. And she said within 15 minutes of the IV moving, she was feeling better. And literally 36 hours later, she was back to total normal, feeling good, full energy back. So if that's a possibility for you, you might want to look at getting tested and find out if that's what's going on. And those monoclonal antibodies seem to be pretty powerful. But in the meantime, we'll certainly hold the space for you. That's a tough one if that's what's going on.
Yeah, I don't know if it is or not, because I'm pretty confident that I had it before, although I've never had a positive test, because by the time I'm tested, been on ivermectin already for some time, and I don't think that, you know, it shows up. I was thinking,
right,
I am basically looking at just this morning, that suggestion was also made to me. So I was going to look into that possibility. I've got to be able to be tested positive for it, and I don't know if that's going to be happening at this point, but. But maybe, you know, I don't.
Well, hold the space. The best understanding I have is as fast as you can get treatment. You know, apparently a lot of people are being told, well, you've got it, go home and see how you do, and if you have trouble, get back with your doctor. And by the time they get to the hospital, it's getting to the point of being a little on the late side, that really, like, the first days are really urgent. And by the way, I just want to put out, I assume you're using a human prescription, ivermectin, but for anybody who happens to be listening, you know, there's a lot of talk about using ivermectin out of the farm store, because it's a common dewormer for horses, and people are using horse dosages of ivermectin and going to poison control. And there's a little bit of mislead there in the media world, using that word ivermectin and connecting it with a horse dewormer, where it's actually also for a long time, it's a drug that's been used successfully for several different disorders in humans. But of course, a human prescription, not out of the farm store. So just to be clear on that for anybody who happens to be listening.
Sure. So, what I was identifying for myself this morning, I mean, generally, Michael, I've just been so sort of deeply engaged, and the pain has felt so strong relative to my strength. You know, it's like the non-being content coming up, which is why in our last conversation, it was helpful when you talked about just holding love present, letting love be there, because just the willingness and feeling and having, you know, all this come forward was pretty overwhelming for me, pretty overwhelming to my body. And
I hear you.
Just holding love present and letting that work on the content was a helpful thought for my last conversation. And what I could identify clearly this morning is just, you know, the pivotal thought, you know, that I have is that that it's just only right that, or let's see, how do I language this? The desire I have, the goal I have, is that we not give up on this relationship, that she and I not give up, that she not give up. You know, I don't want to give up, but that we don't give it up.
Right.
And I think that's...
So Doug, notice your speech. And remember the idea from Laws of Living of regulatory speech, that the body of a sentence determines what we're creating, whether we're in the acceptance or rejection of the body of it. So notice that three times within three sentences, the body of the sentence is give up. And you might want to look at your focus in the idea of avoiding giving up, which means there's a lot of creative energy going into supporting giving up. What is it you really want there? Well, what if you went to constructive language about what you really want to create? What would it be?
I want continued, loving, determined intention towards moving forward in this relationship until we are successful. That's what I want.
I'm with you. I hold the space for that. I hear that loud and clear. And I join with that thought rather than the, you know, don't want to give up. Because, you know, energetically, and of course that points to, and there I would suggest you do some worksheets around this giving up idea and clean out whatever's in your file that keeps prompting that to come into the conversation, so that you've just got total focus and total clarity on creating what I hear as wholeness and well-being in and through this relationship.
Right.
Yeah. So we're here holding the space.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, maybe that's just fine. I'll just settle into that and yeah.
We're with you, and it sounds like your lungs are sounding pretty good and pretty clear.
Well, they're slightly better than they were maybe yesterday. Although you can see that it still comes up with a cough from time to time.
Mm.
But if I stay extremely calm, I keep my emotions as equanimous as possible, and I basically minimize my exertion, I'm all right.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we hold space for total, complete healing, and if what your body needs to do is create antibodies to deal with this, that you're able to do it, you're empowered to do it, and you come out strong and well and whole on the other side of it.
Very good, Michael.
Yeah. All right,
my
friend.
Well, I appreciate that support and holding, you know, the clarity of just holding, holding the thought for having success.
Awesome.
Okay. Have a good one.
Well, we're with you, sir.
All right. Very good.
Okay. Take care. Blessings.
Blessings.
And we have a hand up, and I believe it is Miss Susan Bingham, 610. You're on the air.
Oh, sweet.
Hey. Hi. Yeah. Thank
you. Hey there, young lady.
The other day, Michael. Yeah. So Michael encouraged me to ask you something that I've been wanting to ask, Jeannie, and that is to have you talk a little bit about your women healing women activities, what you do and so forth. Would you be willing to talk about that?
Sure. I actually haven't got anything scheduled, and it's been, it was 2017, the last women's intensive that I did, but mm-hmm. I kind of play it by ear.
Did that
I start
long ago,
out
sweetie?
And it has been because mom attended
My
it.
Goodness.
It was the one I did in Abingdon. And
oh, yeah, that's right.
Mom attended that one. And then after that, then she passed. I don't think that we did one in Oak Island after that. It would have been 2018 then, but we were back here. And I may have done one in 2018, but we were back here in August
did.
Of 2018.
Right. I think we did one in Oak Island in the winter of 2018 before we came back here. That was that was the last one. That was the one where you really worked with several women who'd had miscarriages and abortions, and you did some really powerful work with healing in that arena. Yeah,
it's, you know, I kind of go along the lines of Michael's 9-day why again, as far as the topics. You know, I definitely cover the forgiveness work and talk about, you know, how it's all tied together. I do a few things differently in directing more towards women and women's issues. And actually the way that I even got started doing women's intensives was during an intensive that we were doing in Palm Coast, and the topic came up of, you know, women's body functions and menstrual periods and having babies and sexual issues and things like that. And I was talking, just sharing, you know, in the group. And afterwards, one of the ladies came up and she said, you know, a lot of us would like to talk about that, but we're not as brave as you are to talk in a mixed company. You should do a women's group. And she just kept on me. And so I finally agreed. And she even, I mean, she went to the point of she had bought a house. She hadn't furnished it yet in Florida. And it was like, you know, you can do it in my house. You know, we have plenty of room. We can put, you know, blow-up beds. I'll get tables and all the kitchen stuff and everything. And so, you know, she just kind of pushed me into going forward with it. And I actually had 13 women at that first intensive. And I just kind of let it flow in the energy of it. And when we start talking about things and I will share my experience. You know, I got married when I was 16, and I stayed in that marriage for 3 years and was physically abused and created a lot of physical damage, you know, internal injuries and things. But so I will share that, and then that sometimes gets women talking, and they'll share what they've gone through, and, you know, I just go from there and allow the energy to move, and whether they need to process, you know, and deal with stuff. You know, it was like 40 years since my experience before I finally, you know, sat down and started facing it. And you know, it kind of put it in my mind that, you know, I don't have to ever see him again or look at him again or whatever. I can just pretend like it didn't happen. And of course, you can't do that. It constantly comes up in your life. So we did one ceremony, and this is the one that Michael was talking about. Actually, in this one intensive we did at Oak Island, there were two women who had had multiple abortions. There were a couple of women who had had miscarriages, and there was even one who had had a child that was born and then later died. But all of them were losses. And, you know, I had had a miscarriage and actually had two. But the first one was in that marriage where the abuse was. And then the second one was I was pregnant with twins and lost the girl, and my son is the survivor of that pregnancy. And so I would share things like that, and it just kind of opened the floor for women to process things that, you know, they had experienced or been through, whether it was voluntary or involuntary, and yet they had pushed it down and hadn't faced or dealt with the emotional part of it. I mean, even if it was a voluntary abortion, there was still an emotional aspect of losing a child that they hadn't dealt with. And so I had everybody write letters to the baby. I said, you know, if it had a name, address it to, you know, by its name. And I said, if you lost it early, you know, and it wasn't, you didn't even know its sex or anything, I said, give it a name and write the letter to it and explain to the child what happened, or, you know, if it was an abortion, you know, what state of mind were you in? What was going on? Why did you choose, you know, that? And I said, just pour your heart out in that letter. And I said, you don't have to share it. Later, some of them did share it. But then that evening, we went down to the beach, and we set all of the letters on fire. And each woman had a bowl with her letter in it. And so when she set it on fire, she had a bowl of ashes. And so then we would take turns going to the edge of the water and just throwing the ashes out into the water and letting it go. And after everybody had done that, this huge flock of pelicans just came swooping down right above where we were throwing the ashes out. I mean, it was just kind of like, you know, you could almost metaphorically see, you know, spirit just took all that pain and just flew away with it. And so we did things like that. There was, you know, some women that, you know, and this may be TMI for some people, but they would have problems sexually. And so we may actually discuss, you know, how to get to the point of orgasm. And, you know, I mean, just we talk about everything. It's just, and it's just all women. And so they're in a safe space and open enough to be able to talk about that. And there was this one lady that she was so introverted and pulled in and burdened down with, you know, whatever was going on for her. And, I mean, you could see it in her when she arrived at the intensive. I mean, she was just like she had a dark cloud over her. And when she left, she was bouncing and smiling. And it was just a few months later that she got married. And it's like such total changes, you know, in their lives and changes in my life.
So, fantastic. You know,
and we do cover, you know, like I said, the basics of, you know, the forgiveness work and codependency. And if you go to, I was actually trying to multitask here. If you go to my website, which you can also reach from the Why Again site. You can scroll down, and there is a link to, well, I thought there was. I'm not seeing it right now. But anyway, it's Women Healing Women, or Healing the Whole Woman. And if you go to that, there is a link over on the left-hand side that talks about, you know, what's covered in a four-day intensive. And what's and in that one, I cover the Why Is This Happening to Me Again, the Healing Through Relationships, Codependence, Power Person, and the Mind Shifters and Still Point Breathing. And in the eight-day, in addition to those, I cover the Purpose, Personal Power and Commitment, Empowered to Heal, and do the hands-on energy work, and then the Mind Shifters and Still Point Breathing, and Responsibility Communication. You know, so I cover a lot of the same topics. I present in my own way. I mean, you'll hear some of the same things, you know, and you'll say, oh, she's quoting Michael, you know. But
why not?
Yeah, actually, absolutely. No need to reinvent the wheel. And,
right. I do that too. I quote Michael.
But there's testimonials there on my page too of women who have attended the women's intensives and you know, what they have to say about it. And so yeah, I'm pleased, and I hope, you know, if things kind of settle a little bit. Actually, I told Michael yesterday I started writing in my book again. I got another chapter complete, and so
good.
Yeah, but I'm hoping that, you know, perhaps if not this fall, you know, because Michael's actually talking about doing the Laws of Living or the teacher's training, one of those. So maybe in the spring I will do a Zoom women's intensive online.
Wow. You know, Jeannie,
but yeah,
I remember, go
to healingthewholewoman.org, and there's a lot of information out there.
Oh, okay, healingthewholewoman.org. Let me write that down. Now, I remember you telling us, it must have been several years ago, you told us some of what you said this time, but now it's in more detail, and I'm getting a sharper picture of what you did. And all I can think of is, here I am, I'm 77 years old, and I am dealing with, it's as if things go around and around and around in circles. And maybe it's partly because I have time now to look back, and it may be what old people do. A regulatory speech, right, Michael? I shouldn't call myself old, but.
Right, and there is a book about that. I think it's called Why Is This Happening to Me Again?
Right.
Or some people actually title it, Why Am I Doing This to Myself Again?
Oh, right. But it's amazing how thoughts about being older, being female and older, losing some of the things that I felt made me valuable and interesting, like looking good, things like that go away.
Whose
Maybe
judgment
I'm not
is
even
that?
Supposed to mine.
Yep. I think you're beautiful, Susan. And when you were doing the yoga and things during the first intensive, I mean, I was just so amazed. I mean, I don't know how many times I told Michael, I said, look at her body and how flexible she is and how she can move. I mean, I should have told you that instead of telling Michael that. But you're awesome.
Thank you,
And
Jeannie.
I would have never guessed your age.
Oh, well, I had a, we've been.
Excuse me. I'm going to take the progress break in here. What was that little, pushing away that compliment that I just heard? Did you hear that?
Well, I did, and I was going to tell you a story which explains the groan. And I know there may not be much time about that, and it's sort of deflecting away from Jeannie, and so I'm going to come back to Jeannie and think, I would love to be able to have an intensive like that about everything you said, and also include being older and what that means and where we stand and so forth, and maybe that's a whole other thing.
Actually, yeah. One thing that just kind of popped into my head, and this is something I also share in the women's intensive. You know, before I knew that you could do anything else with your body, I mean, I had like fibroid tumors and cysts and endometriosis and all this other. So in 1996, I had a total complete hysterectomy. I mean, they took everything. And
wow.
I was at first just on, you know, the hormones, synthetic hormones that the doctor prescribes. After I met Michael in 2003, it was probably 2004 that I switched over to bioidentical hormones. If your doctor mm-hmm. will test your hormone levels and you can find a compounding pharmacy, they can adjust and make, like I take a progesterone by mouth at night because it also mm-hmm. helps sleep. So if you're not sleeping well,
I need
that's
that.
Something else. Yeah, so
yeah.
It's a progesterone tablet, and I think it's 100 milligrams or micrograms or something. Anyway, I take three of them in the evening before I go to bed, so it helps sleep. And then the other, mm-hmm. the estrogen and the testosterone, is in a cream that I put on my arms or my legs or whatever, and it's just like a tiny, tiny amount that I put on every day. And you just rub, you know, if you put it on your arms, you rub your arms together or rub it on your thighs or whatever. And then I go back every 6 months and they retest my hormones again and make sure that they're level. And, I mean, I have a better level of hormones right now than I had when I was probably 30. And along
That's
with
so
that goes other things like, you know, the way you feel sexually and, you know, your
mm-hmm.
activity. And it just impacts a lot of things. And actually one time, this was back when we had gone to Costa Rica, and we came back and I'd had blood work done, and it was like my cholesterol was high, my sugar was high, my, you know, everything was like out of whack. And I'm thankful
mm-hmm.
I've got such an awesome doctor, because he said, well, what it is your hormones are low. He said, we'll get those back up. He said, it will kick in your metabolism, which will take care of the sugar, take care of the cholesterol. Everything will get back in place. He says, so what we need to do is balance your hormones. Instead of saying, okay, you need to take this cholesterol drug, or you need to take this, you know, high sugar drug, or, you know, whatever. He looked at it that it was the hormones that kicked in everything else. And, you know, that impacts everything from your sleep to the you know, sexual activity to, you know, your skin, I mean, everything is impacted by that. So if you can get your doctor to test your blood on your hormone levels, and you need all three, you know, back before I got this doctor, you know, they just gave me estrogen tablets when I had a hysterectomy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, you need to have testosterone and progesterone too. You have to have all of them. And so, you know, that's, I would direct you there first and then find a good compounding pharmacy to create what the doctor prescribes, and then they test you every 6 months to make sure you're, you know, sometimes my testosterone will be up, they'll lower that portion, you know, or something like that. So
and
I think that's very important.
Will a regular
Pardon?
MD do this? Or will a regular MD?
Just tell him to order the blood work to test your estrogen, testosterone, and progesterone, and that you want to get a bioidentical. Yeah.
Your regular MD, generally speaking, won't do that. It's just not, you know, it's just not in their purview. But find yourself a naturally oriented, enlightened medical doctor, and you're going to see transformation like you can't imagine.
I know when. Yeah. That's great.
Yeah, I don't think any woman needs, you know, they talk about menopause and it's natural and, you know, to go through all this and I think if your hormone levels, you know, and they can balance them, and it's bioidentical, so it's not, you know, the synthetic, you know, imitation, you know, this imitates the estrogen or this imitates that, but it's actual pure chemicals, you know, and that was another thing that I checked with the pharmacy, too, to make sure that the compounding that they did, that they weren't ordering something from, you know, China or, you know, Guatemala or somewhere else, you know, that they knew their sources. And so I think that the first and foremost is hormone levels. I mean, that kicks in your emotions and everything else. So getting those in balance is really important.
Well, that's so good. Yeah, thanks. That is very good. I've taken notes, and I do have a medical doctor friend who
left her medical profession and became a functional medicine person and an acupuncturist, and she does tapping, and that's the one.
She probably would do that then.
Work she done. Yeah, then she would. She could order those things too. She's still got her
right
medical license. Cool. That's
sounds
very
like a perfect
helpful
person.
Yeah. Oh, thanks a lot. Very helpful.
Yeah.
No, the thing that happened was we're making these videos for our church services, which are now back on Zoom only. In Pennsylvania, we've been shut down because numbers are up with COVID. And
right,
we made the video, and it popped up on the Sunday service. And I was just, you know, I didn't like what I saw. I really didn't like what I saw. This is a big thing. I look like a crabby, tense, colorless lady. There you go. That's the truth of the moment. That's my ego truth. And so,
well, I'm here
to
affirm you, young lady. I'm here to affirm you 2,000%. That's a lie.
Well, my, yeah.
You're
okay.
looking through a perceptual construct where you've been fed so much crap about yourself, my dear, that it's ridiculous.
Yeah,
just,
well,
you know,
I think a lot of us, and this is for you, Jeannie, I think a lot of us women could use a little section of your worksheet on this very thing, on your workshop, if you do it. And if you do it, I'm in. So hurry up,
okay,
and do it.
And in the women's intensive, if you go to the website under where all the worksheets are, I use the one that's called abbreviated, and that's why I've got both the 7-step that Michael uses all the time and the abbreviated version in
yeah
the app. I use
mm-hmm
the abbreviated version in the women's workshop, and one of the main things that I point out when I'm doing that, and the part that I really like on that worksheet, is that when you state your goal, then there's a second section. It's like, so I want, you know, the goal that I have is this so that I can. And it has another blank.
Yeah.
And
oh, that's
that second one is the,
yeah,
that's the underlying goal. You know,
right,
I want them to treat me nice so I can feel, you know, perfected
right
or something, or so I
yep
can feel safe.
Right.
And that is actually the goal. The other is a surface
mm-hmm
goal.
I got it. Yep, Magda put that in. I remember that she put that in, and I thought that's a cool thing to add.
Yeah. I think she said that David actually came up with that, but I attributed it to Magda as well.
Oh,
so, but I love
okay
that part. Yeah.
Thanks. And so, Jeannie, it's womenhealingwomen.org or com or what? Say
healing
again
the whole woman. I tried to get
woman
Women Healing Women. Yeah, healing the, and I couldn't get, somebody else had the Women Healing Women already trademarked, so my website
okay
is actually Healing the Whole Woman.
.org. Okay, thank you so much.
And like
very
I said, there's
practical
pages of testimonials of people that have attended the, or of women who have attended the women's
mm-hmm
workshop. And
yeah.
And, yeah. So thank you.
Okay. Well, thank you, too. I've been wanting to do that, but I thought, you know, this is Michael's thing, and Jeannie does what she does, and maybe I shouldn't be messing around with this.
No, I appreciate it.
Thank
you.
All right.
Good questions, and this isn't my show. This is our show.
Yes. You made that
and,
clear when you called, Michael. That was very nice.
Yeah. Sweet. Well, thank you for asking those questions, and maybe that will open the space for more of the ladies who are participating in the show to ask Jeannie more questions, and let's have more of her input. Her input is always awesome. So, and we're down to the last, we're less than a minute, so the show's going to cut us off. So I'm just going to say thank
all
you,
right,
Jeannie, and thank you, Susan. And everybody, have the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give the world. Blessings.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with Dr. Michael Rice and myself, Jeannie Rice, and Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet, as we present the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We are here for 2 hours every Monday through Friday from 12 noon to 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Mind Shifters Radio. For more information on Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. That's www.whyagain.org.